Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 520.
Imaginary fireworks everywhere. I'm not talking about just any fireworks. Big fireworks, big explosions, big explosions. Like the tearing down the building's got nothing on us kind of fireworks.
That would be an implosion. The tearing down the building. My name is John Morgan. Cold Coffee is with me for the 520th consecutive week. That is right. I know the dates don't add up exactly right, but that is, as far as I'm concerned, a 10-year anniversary. 10 straight years of the MMA Roadshow in your life. And it's been funny, man, getting messages from people who have been there since day one. Mad respect to anybody that has been hanging around this chaos for 10 straight years. It is much, much appreciated. But that's an accomplishment, man. That's an accomplishment. When we started this thing, you know, I said the keys to me, number one, I wanted it to sound good. The audio quality had to be nice. It needed to be really good. So invested in some really nice broadcast headsets from the start that it sounded really, really good. And my other thing was I want to make sure it's consistent. I don't want to, you know, sometimes we do it, sometimes we don't. We get, you know, we switch around. And we've had to move the dates a little bit, a couple times, whether it be just because of, gosh, the way the scheduling of the UFC has changed. I mean, we got this thing started before morning weigh-ins were a thing, so we've had to make some adjustments. We've had some travel issues over the years that have caused a couple movements. But for the most part, I mean, you're talking about consistency for 10 consecutive years.
It's nuts. And if somebody was like, okay, well, I get it, 520 episodes. If you want, and we can just have another reason to say it's the 10-year anniversary, April 5th, 2015 was the very first show in Miami. We were sitting in Delray Beach, Florida. The title. John Morgan, Cold Coffee, you're in Delray Beach, Florida, where they sat on a patio and recorded the debut edition of the podcast. Morgan recounts the pair's time with the Black Zillions, a visit to American Top Team, and looks ahead to Ultimate Fighter 21.
Oh, God.
An exclusive conversation with MMA legend Vitor Belfort closes the episode.
Look at that.
That was a hell of a trip. That was a great trip. Because I remember at the time, you had to go down there as well, right, for passport?
Yes, that's what
so
it was.
You were getting your passport renewed down there. And we were like, oh, well, let's just go down there and let's just see what we could do. And it was like, all right, yeah, this sounds great. Fine, let's do it. I think that was it, right?
Yeah, no, that was it. I didn't realize.
Because there were a mix of things. Because we went for the trip for the Black Zillions and stuff, and then you needed to get your passport.
I didn't realize my passport was about to expire, and I think I had a trip to Brazil or Canada or something coming up. And I was like, the only place that could get me in, they were like, you know, I reached out to the national network, or they were like, if you can get to the Miami office. I'm like, what? All right, well.
It's just around the corner.
If we're doing that, let's figure out a way to do it. So, yeah exactly. I had to go to the passport office to get my passport renewed.
Yeah. But, I remember that was a great trip because going to the Black Zillions gym, then going to the American Top Team gym.
Yeah.
And that footage still exists out there on YouTube I'm sure I'm one of the sites that the junkie has went through different players
or whatever. Oh, because
we've
gone through like different video
players.
Went through multiple
video players
over the
and
years.
Stuff. But I remember going in through the Black Zillion gym. Everybody was – it was so crowded and packed. I remember we were shooting footage. I remember
because
like,
that was before they got the beautiful new like Sanford Training Center. This was that old one that was in like a little parking lot.
A little parking lot. Yep. It was so crowded. I remember just thinking like, please don't hurt somebody. I was more worried about me tripping somebody that was like training for something.
Gosh, I forgot about that
gym. Incredible. It was so cool. And then we went over to the American Top Team. That was right after they opened the big one, right?
Was that – were we in the big one already at that one?
I think that could have been
the big
one.
Yeah, I think you're right, like right after the
opening. Because I feel like – I feel like we've only been to that one gym.
I think you're right.
We visited.
That must have been right after.
I think
if you've never seen the American Top Team headquarters, it is unbelievable.
And I'll double check. But by the time we're done with this episode, I'll look to see when the debut was. That means it would have to have opened in 2014 or 2015. It had to been just brand speaking or whatever if we did. But, when you see the Ultimate Fighter 21 –
That kind of puts it in perspective there for you.
But what a trip, man. What a ride. So, so those that are like, well, you know, it's not technically 10 years. It's 10 years of episodes.
It is. And you know what's funny is so it's funny that you say that date because 10 years, April, like, I haven't pulled the trigger yet, but I think I'm going to go to Miami for UFC 314. So that would be right around 10 years.
Just 10 years.
Exactly. And it would be back in Miami for UFC 314. So that would be pretty funny. It's a ride, but you know, it's funny because the couple reasons we started this thing. Number one, I used to be traveling a lot more. I mean, I'm still traveling a lot, but it used to be way more like international. Like we were going to, you know, global markets and going to Brazil multiple times a year and going to Asia and, you know, just Europe several times and just kind of wanted to share stories from the road and, man, talk to media and other places and stuff that just didn't really fit into the coverage of MMA Junkie. You know what I mean? It's like we're spending all this time on the road but not really getting anything out of the road itself. You know what I mean? And so I thought that was a big part of it. And so, you know, that's changed a little bit. Obviously traveling a lot less, especially internationally these days as my kid gets older and my job yeah. role has changed all that. But the other thing was, and it was kind of funny because I did always think, man, it'd be nice to have something that we own that's like a media outlet of our own that if we ever wanted or needed to have a place to continue to put things out, and for some reason we didn't have the outlet of MMA Junkie to put it out, there was still a place to be able to speak to the masses and put something out. And obviously that did end up becoming something that needed to be, at least from my perspective. You, of course, still going strong over there. But, you know, we never really have pushed this as a big business or a big financial thing. You know, obviously we appreciate everybody that supported us over the years at patreon.com/MMA Roadshow. There are, of course, costs that are involved with just hosting, but we've never really looked at it as a profit center. It's more just like a passion project and something fun to do. And
so if you ever go to try to find that, this is a different, when we shot the tour, maybe we shot it then or we just looked at it. This is from Junkie's website. We mentioned how the players had changed. This was July 27, 2016, but the video is not accessible.
The video doesn't work.
Because the player doesn't work there. But looking at the timeline of when like the Ultimate Fighter went and did a video there, American Top Team themselves put out this on April 19th. They put out this video that the Tough people or the Ultimate Fighter filmed on April 9th. So literally when we filmed this on the 5th, we were there at this was right when it
like
was
literally right when it was open.
Literally right when it just
that's
opened.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
It's been a journey, wow. man. It's I mean, like I said, 10 years. I'm telling you, man.
It's funny as much as, you know, little things like that, those trips, you know, people always ask, you know, like little sort of behind the scenes or stories. Like a lot of times I'll, you know, unless it's certain fights that stand out or certain other little things, you know, a lot of times it blurs. But I do remember this trip. I do remember the podcast all very vividly, but definitely going to those gyms because it was just so unique and it was so different. And it was all still very exciting and new at that point because 2015, I had just came over from the UFC,
right.
like literally
a month earlier,
months before. Yeah, because February, I had been helping before when I was still at the UFC. It was just kind of down the low.
Is that
know?
Okay to talk about now?
I mean, it's been long enough, I suppose. Yeah. You know, so before I ever left,
I guess
the
statute of limitations has run out on that. Yeah, we used to throw you a couple bucks to shoot some videos because we didn't really have video resources at the time, right? So we'd be like, hey, what if we throw you a couple bucks? Can you film me? Or if it was like Steven Morocco would be on site, we'd be like, hey, man, can you just... Now, obviously, you didn't have to edit it, but we didn't take a whole lot of your time, but we just didn't have all the gear and stuff.
Like,
so
yes, I can.
That's funny. I don't think we've ever talked about that.
Yeah, we haven't. But 2015, so that was when I officially came over and became just a contractor, you know. Yeah. But I'm officially on the books. Man, what a time, man.
Crazy. I tell you, it's been good for us, man, both, I think, just to do this. And, I mean, obviously, we've made a lot of relationships from it. And, you know, at some point, maybe it doesn't. It's funny because one of the reasons we never focused on trying to make it a business is because we were really concerned about there being a conflict of interest, right? Because, I mean, there were times where I think folks from USA Today were like, hey, you know, you guys can't have your own media thing if you're part of a media group. And we're like, well, but it's different. We're focused on different things, and we had to be very careful that, you know, we didn't have content that should have gone to the website but went to us instead or whatever. And so that's really one reason we never really tried to make it a profit center or to make it a real business. It's just because we didn't want to get, in on the wrong side with our bosses. But now everybody at MMA Junkie has a podcast now, right?
Oh, I mean, everybody and their brother.
There's no conflict, man. We can all do it over there. But, man, honestly, you know, it's funny because, you know, you talk about vividly remembering the first podcast. Because now, man, I mean, hell, you're definitely as much of a host of this thing as I am. It's not just me sharing my opinions and you kind of finding a way into it. But I know, like, in the beginning, you know, you were kind of nervous, right? You're like, I don't really feel comfortable.
I like being behind the scenes. Yeah. I was like, no, this is cool. I was like, let's just have some guests and I'll just chime in. You know, I was like, you know, well, part of it, you know, even with, like, you know, and a lot of that goes over to even when I do interviews and stuff now, you know, like, I've never wanted it to really be, like, about me. Like, even when I interview a fighter, it's like, I'm like, I'd rather have a great shot of them doing whatever. So even when we started on some of these ones, I was like, I'd rather just sit in the back. Let me just twiddle the knobs, make sure that the volume levels are perfect.
Right.
You know, and just chime in every once in a while, which is so anti, you know, antithetical, whatever, to this sport where everybody's like, oh, no, it has to be about me. I have to have my brand. I think I was the one that was like, nah, I'm cool.
Yeah.
I'm cool back here in the back. But I do like it. I mean, I appreciate, you know, definitely how my own style of interviews has changed over the years because having to chat and talk more, you know, it's like where you know, I get it. It's like you want to sit in the back, but it's like, no, you don't have that luxury. Sorry, you got to go in the front.
Right.
But that certainly helps in situations. So it's funny. So today, we've talked in the over the years, and we've talked with, like, Chidi and Junkiewani, like, tons of times, and his family and his brother, whatever. So there was a point today where, like, you know, to peel the curtain, I wasn't in my normal, like, seating area, so I sat a little further back. So I was like, hey guys, I'm gonna take it easy today. I'm just gonna kick it, you know, because we were passing this wireless mic around. I was like, oh man, this is such a hassle. I was like, forget about it.
Because you guys were set up at Palace Station today. I'm assuming that's to do with all the construction stuff that's going on the Apex. So
yeah, but it's weird because we'll go back and do events there, and then we go back over here for things. It's like, I don't understand what's
going on. So it's kind of a non-traditional setup, whereas normally these days we all have wired microphones, so everybody has a microphone sitting in front of them, so it's super easy to just pick up the microphone. But when you have a wired microphone or wireless, which is funny because that literally goes back to the whole reason why I became the first question guy. It's a pain in the ass to pass that microphone around. And the old story, if anybody doesn't know, is Dave Schaller was like, I'm tired of this gap of getting a microphone to Smike. Can I just give you the microphone because I know that it'll be easy and we'll get going? And that's how the first question thing started happening. So, yeah, so you had wireless mics. So today you're just like,
I'm fine. Like, if it makes it to me, not, whatever. But that being said, on when Chidi got up there and we're chatting and then they were pretty much all done, I was just like, all right, I'm just going to be a dumbass for a second. So he comes up there and I was like, obviously I started talking with him about his voice because he's got a very unique voice. And people heard him, he's like this raspy, like, whatever, you know?
It's unique. It's the deepest of deep with the little rasp in it.
And I'm not sure if you heard this part. So
I did. I was watching your coverage.
So I was just like, you know, hey, I was like, so what happens when you get a sore throat? Does your voice sound normal
at
that point?
He cracked up. He's like, oh, like the opposite.
Like the opposite. Yeah. You know, and so we joked a little bit about it, whatever. But at the end of the day, when everybody's gone, the camera guy, that's not one of the normal fill-in camera guys or whatever, he sits there. And we were joking about different other things. And he was like, I just don't know if I would tell these, you know, have enough confidence to tell one of the most dangerous people in the world or make fun of his voice or whatever, you know, or something. I was like, bro, you got to understand. I've seen this guy over. And I was like, you know, I felt
they
we could play.
You, they know.
They trust that, you know, we could say stuff. And so fast, you know, rewind back 10 years ago when I was with the UFC, I maybe would have thought that was okay because they understand, like, hey, you know, he's staff. He's more than likely probably teasing or playing or whatever. But if you don't get the reps to sort of read a space or read a room or be able to deliver it, it might have sounded completely asinine. He might have been like, what you saying about my voice?
Yeah,
or whatever.
But you know, like, I feel comfortable with you. I know who you
are. With it. You know,
if it's somebody you didn't recognize, maybe you.
And so it played out well, and it worked out. But that, a lot of that goes back to, you know, like what we were saying. You know, like, we've been doing these reps for so many years. You know, shit's changed a lot.
Oh,
you know,
bro,
where it's like, you know, you can do
your skill set,
things.
Bro. Your skill sets, man, increased tremendously in
that
world in
that MMA awards.
World MMA awards, baby. Journalist,
but then
the
I
year.
Go there today. I'm like, nah, man. I'm in second row. I'm gonna take this one back. I might lose my place in line.
That was a little passive aggressive Morgan coming out in you right there. You're like, oh, y'all took my seat. I'm not doing nothing. How about that? I think that's hilarious. No, I did see that. So it was funny, and I'm sure you guys will probably see this on social media. I'm assuming they'll do it. But so anybody that didn't watch the media coverage today, and I did watch your media day, I thought the jokes were funny. And then he revealed, like UFC. Well, he didn't say it was UFC Social, but clearly it was UFC Social. They had him reading, like, children's books, I guess. They had him reading, like, One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish, or whatever. I want to – first of all, let me just say – I actually commend the UFC social team. I feel like they've been doing a lot of like more creative stuff lately.
They've been bringing new blood, and they've been rotating a decent little bit as well. And I think that partially helps, but also
because you need fresh, ideas. They're trying to, but it is always weird because I kind of go back and forth on that. Where because when I have like young journalists or media or whatever, they're asking me, I do always say like, you know, sometimes some of this outside of the box stuff you might not want to do on fight week, because that is when, you know, athletes can be a little bit cranky. You know, they're cutting weight. They're a little bit focused. They're like, well, I don't want to, you know, why you got me reading a kid's book right now when I'm about to go get in a fist fight on Saturday night? But I will say Wednesday is early enough in the week that they haven't gotten into the final stages of the weight cut. So there's a fine line, but I don't know. I feel like I've been seeing some more creative stuff from the UFC social team lately, and want to say I do enjoy it when they get outside the box. I think last week they had like – guys putting blindfolds on and trying to draw the UFC logo or whatever, like, you know, just silly stuff or whatever. So, but yeah, you got to be careful with that on fight week too, because that's that weight cut can change things.
Yeah, 100%.
It was funny even before you guys started joking, even before you told your joke. I was thinking like, and I was actually happy to hear that he was talking about it, but like, Chini should do like the UFC voiceovers for like the opens to the pay-per-views or something like that. Like, no offense to whatever the guy. And I know Ron Perlman does the pay-per-views. And I think it's another guy that does like fight nights.
Yeah, I'm not sure who that guy is. But yeah, because I wasn't sure.
And it feels
sure
like he's almost like trying to be Ron Perlman or something.
Like, yeah, I mean. Supposedly somebody told me that that guy is somebody, is an established with something. I don't know if it's wrestling or something.
Right.
So he obviously it works in whatever, and I think, you know, he's trying to carry that, but also trying to make it mesh with what has sort of worked.
Yeah.
You know, when you have Anthony Bourdain, when you have Ron Perlman, you know, like very like fucking not in class, but very unique.
Yeah.
But there's something about their voice, just that easy draw on them that's just like you can't fake that. So you either got to go completely your own and do whatever, but. I mean, it's not bad, but
it's
fucking Ron. It's not Bourdain, you know. Like,
I forgot about the Bourdain ones,
man.
Those
hit hard.
Those were good.
Those hit hard, man.
But like honestly, like Chidi reading those. With some training, especially like to understand like the inflections
and be able to deliver more, because his voice is it's like yours, where it has a unique. It feels heavy in a certain range.
Right.
He just needs to be able to boost it to kind of get it out of that range and hit higher little octaves and stuff. But it's so unique and it's so whatever.
We're pretty good.
But yeah, it's like that's why I was joking, because I was thinking about his voice. I was like, man, how does it sound with a fucking sore throat? It already sounds like most people's sore throats. You know, like what is this?
I'm sorry,
like?
Guys. I got a bit of a throat.
He's like, I don't know what the hell's going on.
That'd be great.
But
instantly sounds like he's sucking on helium, dude. Just
got a little.
It was awesome hearing him today. Like, somebody asked about whatever. I think they were asking about his brother, and they're asking him. And it wasn't even so much about – it was a point I think we knew or whatever. And he's like, it's not even about the training with my brother there. He's like – he's been my, like, support for, like, my whole life. Yeah. He's like, he's just – he has to be there. There's just something about them being there that calms me down or whatever. And I was just like, love that, man. Family, I mean, maybe it hits harder as you get older, you know, and family's always been important. But when you really hear it more, and then you hear, like, two guys that have fought and they do their thing, you know, and there was a point where obviously we were like, oh, how cool would it be to have two brothers fighting, which we'd seen before in the UFC. But, you know, these guys' trajectory of when they were sort of competing sort of, like, cut off,
different
you
times.
Know.
Yeah, it didn't really overlap a whole lot.
So he trains with his brother, but to hear just that, I was just like, man, that's strong. It just, I don't know why it hit good today when he was talking about it.
I think it does. As you get a little bit older, and, I mean, you start to realize, like, how important family is, man. I know, and it's a cliche, family's everything, but, like, it really is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it really is. That's who's there for you at all times.
Yeah.
So.
There's one thing to say it, and then there's one thing to say it when you could tell, like, how heartfelt it is. Yeah. Like, you're just like, oh. But, yeah, it was powerful. And then maybe it was just in his voice. He's like, yeah.
It just adds feeling
there.
To it, bro.
My brother there. And I was like, oh, shit.
I'm telling you. He really does. He really he does need to be voice acting.
Junkie Radio did an interview with him a couple days back, and it's so funny. Just the one part at the very, very beginning, he talked about one of the first times – or George and Goes, I think, were walking through the Mandalay or some casino or some whatever, and they said this car rolled up with tinted windows, and the window rolled down, and he's like, "What's up, fool?" And he's like, "Oh, shit, what's going on? Who are these dudes?" And it was like Chidi and his brother. They were all scared at first because these brothers rolled up. We're like, "What's up, fool?"
That's great, man. Oh, those are dope. What are you talking about, old school days, man? Man, you know, the whole Mandalay Bay situation, yeah, and all that. I mean, that all changed.
Going over there that last week was so surreal. Yeah, it was just nostalgic.
The whole radio experience, man. It was funny. Yeah. I put it on Patreon.com, the NBA Roadshow, the conversation I did with Jason House, where I was on the House podcast. And that was a story that came up from him. He was like, "I remember the first time, you know, Jason House remember the first time he was a guest or had a client in there, and like what a big deal it felt like to be I got my client inside Junkie Radio in Mandalay Bay." You know what I mean? That was a shame that was a pandemic issue there, man. That was a shame that went away. That was such a cool time,
that was
too.
So unique. I mean, like, it's funny when we were driving back to go to it was like, because some of the roads that we used to pass to take to get to it have been cut off ever since they expanded the Mandalay Bay, so you can't even go some of the routes. But it was still like, you know, like riding a bike, man, just hopping back up there, going in there and going through the little side entrance and stuff. I was like, dude, it's so cool.
It was, and I will say it was pretty cool to just be like, I mean, hey, we just go into Mandalay Bay every day for work. That's what we do. You know what I mean? Like
something very Vegas about it.
Very, very Vegas. I did see we'll get into the main event and some of the others. I mean, it wasn't a huge media day today, but I did see that you got some bonus coverage from Ryan Spann in there.
It was supposed to be six people today.
How do we end up with seven?
How did we end up with seven?
I could hear a little bit off because I saw – so I was, you know, I was walking around the house, so I had your coverage pulled up. Had headphones in. I was doing some packing, getting ready because I leave tonight, and doing some things. And all of a sudden, I'm like, "Why is Ryan Spann?" I was like, "I saw the schedule. I didn't see him on there." But I watched the interview. Clearly, we had to get in the reverse mic situation. That's your guys' thing. That's your bond. Y'all share that. But then, like, I heard it, but in my head, I'm like, "Why is Ryan Spann in there?" And then I could hear, and it was, you know, it was a little faint because it was just a room mic that was picking it up. That you were like, "Oh, I'm sorry. Was he not on the schedule?" My bad. So did you just start volunteering people for media day?
So he and Nobby walked into the room, into the press room, and he started walking up. I was looking down at my screen. I saw him come in, and then he walked up to the stage, and then he was like, "Oh, no, man, y'all don't want me here." Blah, blah, blah. And that's when I heard Nobby, and I misheard Nobby. I thought Nobby said, "Well, it's on your schedule," but he was like, "Nah, they don't want to talk to me, you know." And I was just like, "Bro, of course we'll talk to you." I was like, "Go on, get back up there. We'll talk to you." And he's like, "Okay, I'll get up there." And then it was just, and then after the fact, I was like, and when somebody brought up how he wasn't supposed to, they're like, "How did we get a Brian Spann?" I was like, "Well, guys," I was like, "until you said that, I forgot that Ryan wasn't on the main event, or not
on
the main card.
Yeah.
So I just assumed he'd be there. It's been a while since we've seen him on the prelims. He's the featured prelim.
Feature prelim.
You know,
good
so
fight
he's still
too,
up
man.
There.
Good fight. Waldo Cortez Acosta, that's a good fight.
It's a dangerous fight.
Very dangerous.
But so, yeah, seeing him in the room, it was my own brain fart. But I just saw him out in the hallway right before, so it was like, "What's up?" So when he came in there, I was just like, "Dude, go up there," you know. And it didn't help that it was probably me saying go up there, because I think he would have been fine just like, "No, they don't want to get me up there."
Y'all are boys,
and I was
though,
bro. I was like, "Bro, come on, get up there." And then he was like, okay.
Y'all got that connection.
I felt so bad for the group afterwards, because I was like, "My bad, guys." I literally thought he was supposed to be up there.
I did think it was funny, too, when Ryan stood up there that he was like, "Hey, I need everybody to tell me your name and your media outlet."
Yeah.
I thought it was – because on the one hand, he said, "Just because my mom watches and she wants to know."
Yeah, and he said that before.
But then he said, "And I want to hold you accountable to the questions you ask." And it's funny because, you know, I'll tell you this. So they used to ask us at press conferences to, like, say your name and your outlet. And to be honest, like, because I was at, like, every press conference, I'm like, "That's stupid. I'm not going to say it." So I never did, even though they would be like, "Can you please say your name and outlet?" And I'd just be like, "Uh-huh." And I just ask my question, you know what I mean? And again, not because I was trying to, like, "Oh, look at me," but I was just like, "That's dumb. Like, I don't have to do that every time."
Yeah.
But it is, you know what, for an athlete that is getting asked questions by maybe somebody they don't know,
yeah,
they might want to know. Just like, hey, man, if you're talking to me, who are you?
And that's the first time I've heard him say the hold him accountable part. He said the line before about it. He's like, my mom wants to watch you, so he can point him where to go, you know?
Right.
So I'm wondering if she's going to pull up the old Boxeo Mundial for Armando's part
that.
Of it.
Yeah.
But then I thought about it at the end. I was like, damn, I didn't say it. But I was wondering, I was like, is this him trying to, like, find out again? Maybe he doesn't remember what outlet I'm at, and he wants to just, like, hunt it down. I was like, I know he just – I think part of it, too, is just it's a – break the ice thing for him, like, before we get started, you know, let's just chat, you know, because sometimes I've heard him, like, say their name back, you know. I think it's partially just like a, you know, well, let me put you on the spot as well if you're going to put me on the spot. You know, but yeah,
he is a hell of a lot more jovial at heavyweight.
Oh my lord, right?
it's a different man,
you know. That's a scary, I mean, not that light heavyweight isn't a scary division, but heavyweight is a scary division, even though, I mean, like, it's not like he's the biggest light heavyweight. And it's funny because he said when he started his career, he was a welterweight. So he's up there like, I'm actually a welterweight, guys. We're like, bro, you ain't ever making it down to 170 no matter what you try. Like, you're way too big. But now that he's been able to go up, you know, he's able to do a lot of things that he couldn't really do as much at light heavyweight, which, I mean, like, I think they still employed and did, like, weight training and things of that sort.
Right.
But if you're trying to actually bulk and you put on muscle, you can't really put on muscle and then expect to cut right back down, because muscle's not going to cut. Like, that would be really harsh to build muscle just to strip it away just so you can make a lighter weight. But now that he's got a lot of extra room, he can actually try to work on building his bulk and his frame, because he's a big body. But he's not, like, filled out super thick, you know? Like, he's not lanky by any means, you know, but he's, you know, has definitely room to fill into that frame, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he's more Jon Jones than Brock Lesnar.
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a basketball build.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
He's very athletic. He's very lean. And he's long. And, like, he literally, I could see if he was, if I don't know how well his hand coordination. I've seen him work some massive chokes and he throws some good strikes, but I don't know how good he'd be actually on the court with the hand and eye distance. But, I mean, like, his physicality and his size would, he'd be fucking amazing in it. But in a sport like this, it certainly wouldn't hurt him to, you know, bulk up a little bit, because he's going to be going in there with guys that at times are going to be probably 30 or 40 pounds bigger than him, you know?
It's funny. So this morning, it hasn't come out yet, but I think it'll come out tomorrow. For Grind City Media, I was speaking to Rade Opačić, who's a Serbian kickboxer. He's part of Glory Kickboxing. They're launching this huge tournament, Last Heavyweight Standing. It's going to be this year-long, awesome tournament. And it was funny because I was talking to him. He lived in Canada for a while when he was younger, and he did train in, like, I think he trained in, like, a little bit of grappling, a little bit of jiu-jitsu, like, when he was a teenager, but decided to chase after kickboxing. But anyway, Glory had asked if I would be interested in talking to some of their athletes. And to be honest, it had been a long time since I had done that. But, you know, Marshall Zelaznik's over there, and I'm always a big Marshall fan. Man, I really enjoyed working with him.
Oh, Marshall's great.
You know, when they reached out and they were like, hey, if we set you up some athletes, would you be interested in talking to them? I'm like, bro, you know what, man? I love Marshall. Marshall was always super good to me. Like, yeah, let's do that. So, anyway, first interview I did today. But I was talking to Rade this morning, and I started thinking about that. Like, these massive heavyweights right now, right? Now, I know, look, you know, you talk about, like, all the way to the top of the division in mixed martial arts would be tough, like Tom Aspinall, the great grappling that he has and stuff. But, like, with the fact that there's only, like, 31 heavyweights on the UFC roster, and then you look at, like, the success of Israel Adesanya, of Alex Pereira that came through Glory, like, I wonder if right now would be a good time for these, like, huge, heavy-handed knockout artists, kickboxers. Because I feel like there was a time, like, and again, say what you will about Brock Lesnar, but he was a big bull rush kind of a guy.
Yeah.
The Shane Carwins, the Frank Mirs. By the way, you see Frank Mirs?
I was gonna bring it up after this.
Yeah, man.
You made me think about it. But yeah, he's going through some shit
going through
right
some
now.
Stuff, man. If you haven't seen Frank Mirs' social media, I don't know.
Say that social media video was. It's one thing to see him sitting with his wife and talking and saying, like, he went through a surgery, and then you see the footage of him, you know, working to get up out of a seated position. Then you really start to see. I mean, but granted, the he's still knee deep in, like, the recovery.
Still,
like,
early
the,
on.
The, yeah, like the it made it seem like the surgery just happened. So I mean, like, that's hardcore.
Yeah, shout out to him and good thoughts to him, because obviously he's a guy that's been around. But yeah, it was hard to watch, man. Not hard to watch, but just you. Yeah, when you hear somebody went through a surgery, like, oh, I went through a surgery, like, oh, I hope everything's good. And then you see, like, wait, they're working with you to stand up out of a chair.
Well, like, it's like a complete spinal fusion. So I mean, like, it's literally all around the nerve endings, all the other kind of stuff. So trying to get his back balance, he's probably super sore. It looked like they had, I don't know if those were acupuncture needles or I couldn't tell what that was.
You know
a thing
or two about back surgery, right?
In his calves that you could see when he was standing up.
So that would be like fire some kind of nerve or
something,
right?
It could be. I mean, like if it's acupuncture, they could actually hook those up to something and actually send like a shock through it. But it could be a matter of releasing pressure or, you know, focusing something. I mean, like something that understands like the acupuncture, it'll be a little bit better to speak on how, especially, but I thought it was unique to see it in that particular setting because most times when you go inside what looked like a regular hospital setting or whatever, you don't see a lot of that at times and stuff. But yeah, to see him go through that and to see the size of the scar, I mean, they pretty much just fused it all together. So I mean,
and he even said like emergency surgery, right? Like I think
yeah,
he even said,
sure
so like
what,
I don't know what
well,
causes
I think,
it.
I think he knew that there was either something very, very serious, and then he made the decision to do whatever. So it probably could have either had multiple sort of things, and maybe he just said, okay, let's do this now because we see that this something's oncoming or the potential of, well, we can fix this little part, but that doesn't fix the whole problem. You might still have another thing that triggers whatever. So, you know, for him to do that whole thing, I can only imagine. I think I had like two or three fused. It looked like that size of his scar.
And yeah, it looked
like
serious,
the whole
man.
Thing. So, yeah, I mean, you got to think how stiff and hard to try to retrain your body to move when you're used to move and being able to kind of push yourself forward. There's a bend in your body, in your back, when you like go to sit up. Try to do that completely stiff without
moving. So
with its
fused, that means it's going to be like just...
It'll get used to it, and the bone will move around to it, but more than likely, they're all like in a straight sort of line. There's got to be some sort of movement because, I mean, there's like padding, I forget what they call, just the padding in between the bones where they go. So they're securing it, and it's going to be in a, you know, pretty much standard sort of thing. But there will probably be some movements, but it just depends on how it is. Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's a very, very serious thing. So
yeah,
I mean, what he's
hopefully
going through.
I liked his words though, man, on his post where he's just like, I'm gonna be a son of a bitch, bro. Like you ain't stopping me, dude. That's
the
mindset.
Thing.
And then he came back from a horrific accident to become champion again. So not that I think about fighting career, but I'm thinking about this one
after seeing the severity or whatever, this might just be return to normal life
type
thing.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I don't envision him fighting in any aspect.
No, I don't.
This.
I don't think that GFL signing, you can say goodbye to that, but.
Yeah, this is about quality of life.
Quality of life,
and
he's got a couple of kids, you know, several kids that are all great athletes and doing amazing things, and he wants to be around. I mean, him and his wife are super, super involved with them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's back to
normal
life.
Certainly not MMA.
Life. Certainly not.
Or grappling.
Certainly not MMA. So
I could see him throwing a punch for boxing, but I don't even want to think about
that. Don't think about that. Just get back to normal, man. So shout out to him. But I feel like the heavyweight division now like looks different in terms of, like, you don't have all those like grappling based bodies.
Yeah.
So I wonder if
you don't have the big bloated big guys that you
cutting
see
down
UFC
to
one or whatever.
So true. So I just wonder if maybe, you know, again, Glory's got this. It's like this year long term. It's crazy. So they're starting out with 32 heavyweights. They're gonna have 16 fights. Then from there, those 16 go into like four man tournaments. It's all like random draw, and then they're gonna bring in some more people. So it's gonna be a cool thing that they got going all year.
Random draw, kind of like the PFL like one that just came out.
All right. Do we want to go ahead and get into that? I mean,
I didn't know if we were gonna touch on it or not, but like when I saw that, I was like, they even sort of alluded to it too. They're like, you know, there's some new names in here, you know, and a lot of favorites with experience, you know, looking to kind of go deep. And I'm just like, yeah, you pretty much played it pretty heavy, you know, like the people that are in it.
So I will say I'm glad they got it all announced.
Yeah.
It's good because now we have fights to talk
now
about. We have
talk
matchups.
About.
Now if you do interviews, because it's really weird. Like they would do like media days, for instance, at the start of the season, when people didn't know their matchups yet and stuff. Like, there's nothing to talk about. Like, hey, it's going to be good. I'm going to, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I need to know the fight you have. So now you got a fight, and you're like, especially now that it's a bracket, you know, it's like, hey, man, I know you're not looking past, but you could conceivably get this guy next. Or, you know what I mean? So there's things to talk about. So this is good for them. It's a positive for them.
Yep.
But I did kind of look at the brackets and think, I thought there was going to be like, they even said there was going to be seeding. There's no seeding in that tournament.
Yeah.
It's not 1 through 8 like a traditional, and it doesn't have to be. I mean, it doesn't need to be. Nobody ever said it was going to be a true 1 through 8 tournament. It doesn't need to be, and I'm sure you want to have like some control in matchmaking, because that was just funny, because I was actually talking to Glory staff. They did like They did literally like a random draw, like the ping pong balls in the hopper, and you pull out a number.
That's what I wanted.
See, that's what I wanted too, and I know that that's scary, maybe because you think
you don't want to end up with a bunch of duds or no names. You don't want to have your biggest name sitting off to the side.
Right. So that's the thing. If you do random, you know, ping pong balls, you hope the matchups come together the way you want. And I could see PFL going, "No, man, we got to make sure we get the fights we want." And I get that. That's fair too. But I don't know. It just, if the whole thing was, let's get the transparency, you know what I mean? Let's make sure that nobody thinks, cause that's what everybody said is, hey, man, we see what you're doing here.
Yeah.
If the whole goal was to get away from that, there were two ways to do it. And we talked about it before. It was either A, completely random, or B, just take their topology ranking and be like, look, we just went with those as seeds.
And just take it out of their hands.
It's not ours. Yep. We just went to topology, or I know they always use Don Davis always says fight matrix. He always you look at fight matrix. So go to the fight matrix, pull all the numbers, and just be like, that's our seeds.
Yeah. Or pull the media. You know, not that that ever goes into account when the UFC makes their matchmaking, but they do at least have the media currently until they give it up to the AI and Elon Musk world or Zuckerberg, who knows. That there at least is the media that's pulling the people that are in these top things. So if they would have just said, hey, all right, media, we're going to reach out to 100 of you. Here's the guys, seed them, and then that's going to be the how the thing is. But right now, with it doing like it just still looks like they, you know, pick their favorites. Like, I understand as an organization, you want to, you know, make sure you have the best product that you could put forward. Right. And you need to protect your brand. You need to protect your show. You don't want to go into a whole tournament and leave it up to chance. And then if you get stuck with something, you're like, well, shit, I guess this year's kind of a wash. Let's hope that their sponsors come back after this year. You know, like, they can't really do that. But, you know, don't, at that point, you know, don't try to give the illusion that it's all this whatever and it's this, because when it came around time to reveal, it's just like, and it's so-and-so, and they're against whatever, and it's like, okay, well, yeah, I kind of expected to see that name, and okay, this name's going up to a different division, but he's been reputable in another thing, and it's like, okay, well, if you were seeding, if this person's changing divisions, they probably wouldn't have been seeded really deep in the thing or whatever, and they didn't do so well, but, you know, they're a big name, and they're going to be here.
Yeah, well, like, they put, like, champ versus champ. Like, clearly that would be 1 versus 2 seed, you know what I mean? Why are they fighting each other in the first round? Because you want to have a good – yes, and I don't want to – you know, again, I have been a PFL supporter. I appreciate a lot of what they're doing, but I just thought this was a mishandling.
I wanted them to be – I would love to have seen, like, one of those little turnstile things and pull the numbers out of the thing. Just make it legit like a lotto.
That's exciting.
Then you watch. Then it gave a reason to watch the show.
Right.
You know, because then you're like, oh, I don't want to miss it because, you know, like, there's going to be real legit stuff. This was felt like just tune in to watch their pre-scripted thing. And it was like, okay, that's cool and all, but it was just like, eh. I mean, it's still fine. I mean, I'll still watch the tournament. Okay, I just wanted more chance. I wanted more
I felt the same way.
Play a part in it.
I felt the same way. Like, yeah, look, at least they got the brackets, and we'll tune in. And, you know, I love the fact that they're going on off nights against the UFC, so we don't have to see. So it's good.
I mean, more nights of fights is always good.
Damn right. You know? I want to watch something on TV every night, man. I'll watch it every night. So I'm excited about it. But you know, I'll tell you what. You know, you talk about the UFC rankings. So the UFC – this past weekend, and you know, you kind of joke about the Elon Musk and the AI, and I know that they're talking, they're trying to get this thing fixed, they're trying to make changes, right? But this past week, and you know, I tweet out the updates every Monday night, but this past week they had a specific note to all voters: you need to take out Jairzinho Rozenstruik, Jack Hermanson, Marcus Rogério de Lima, and Caitlin Cerminara, or Caitlin Chikagian, but she's in Cerminara in there. You need to make sure that you don't have them in your rankings. Because they are ineligible due to inactivity, and some of the voters still have them in the rankings. Now,
who
I can tell you
that notice.
The rankings oversight committee, basically, like, you get an email every week that's like, here's when it opens.
Is that through peers that are actually in the voting?
It's actually just through, I guess, Combat Registry, the company that runs it, so that you just get like an email to everybody. Like, it's not from a person. I mean, it is from a person, but it's just from the company, basically.
Have they always dictated who is inactive or not?
No. So here's the
that's
thing.
That's what I'm like. I was like, where is this coming
100%.
From?
So this is my thing. So I actually emailed them back. Because here's the thing. In the past, when people were ineligible, they just took them out. Like, for instance, Jairzinho.
John Jones would have been long gone.
Jairzinho's been out of there for a while. He's just not – like, when you go to do your rankings
– yeah.
After, remember when they were like, after his last loss, they're like, he's gone. He was out of the rankings the next week. But those other ones, Marcus Rogerio de Lima, Jack Hermanson, Caitlin Sermonaire, I still had in all my rankings because to me, they deserve to be ranked. Like, I mean, kind of lower down there. They've dropped just as phase, but I had all three of them. But I was specifically told I have to take them out of my rankings. And it says, there are voters that have these in your rankings. Take them out. And I was like,
Or get removed from the
I don't know. You know what? Maybe I should just left them in and said to hell that I'm leaving them in. But I was like, all right, well, if that's the rules, fine. I'll make sure I'll take them out. So I took them out. I took them out of mine. But I did email them, and I was like, hey, guys. I'm like, if they're not eligible for rankings, why don't you just pull them completely out of the rankings so that their name isn't there? Like, so now we have to have voters remember, hey, out of this pool of eligible athletes, these are ineligible? Like, how are you supposed to remember all that? And whatever, they're all, like, right. Like, I think Jack Hermanson had just gone past a year or
– he's February 10th, 2024. Yeah.
Past a year, right? But – so right away, and I started to go through all of them.
Is Marvin Vittori on there?
Yeah.
He should be inactive.
Let me make sure.
He was gone almost 2 years.
Yeah. So why isn't he on there? Kamaru Usman.
Shady.
How long has it been for Usman?
Yeah.
You know, so like
the John Jones, did that one go out when Jones hadn't fought?
So I'll be honest with you, man. That one upset me because one of the things I've liked being a part of it is because I see everything and I can make sure it's all transparent and I can make sure, you know what I mean? Like, I've been able to observe it. But I emailed him and I was like, this isn't right. Like, what basis are we using? Now, again, I don't know that there's any tomfoolery. And again, that's why I tweeted it. I made sure and tweet because I wanted it to be public record. Yeah. I want that to be public record.
It should be.
Just so you know, here's what everybody was told. But what's the rules?
Yeah.
What's the rules? So I know they're working on changing it. And again, I just, when it changes, that it, like, if you're going to pull them, just pull them. Make them ineligible. And to be honest with you, part of me thought, like, you know what? Fuck it. I should just go back and put them in my rankings anyway. Like, what are you going to do? I think they should be ranked and their name's right here. I want to rank them.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, if they're going to do it, they should pull it from them and make it to where, you know, you're not having to whatever, and then let them, when people say, well, why aren't they there? You could say, well, you know, so-and-so has pulled them from the list of
– I still voted for them.
You know?
Because I think they deserve to be in there.
Yeah, I mean, shady.
I don't like
it. Yeah, I heard that. When you said that, I was like, that doesn't make any effing sense.
Yeah.
I thought it was just, you know, the committee or whoever it was from the peers, not some company that's now – what is probably getting paid to run it?
Oh, 100%. Well, they've always been paid to run it. Yeah, so Combat Registry.
But now it just shows that they probably got told from somebody else, you know, and it's, at that point, you know, it's like, okay. Well, at least you tweeted, and then next thing I know, I'm sure you're going to hand in your resignation and be like, well. You tweeted it. You put it out there, but I mean, you could either do things. I think you could either say, well, you know, obviously they're – there's something that's not transparent. There's something that's not clear. They're doing it. I'm not comfortable with it or whatever. Or let them remove you because you still share every time that they make you do that and say, hey, for a public record, I want to stay involved with this because I want to be transparent. And in the sake of transparency, I'm being told to not to remove these people for an activity, and I've got no explanation.
Yeah.
And then I think you cover your base.
100%.
And then somebody can't be like, oh, why are you still doing it?
I honestly, I'm thinking about just putting them back in next week and be like, well, if they're still in there, and then if you want to take them out,
or
take
just
them out.
Maybe run it would suck to have another list, but a list that has off the side, and just do another tweet that says, current list of roster athletes we're told to still keep off. And then have people be like, why?
Why? Why?
You know?
It's true.
I would do something like that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't – don't go – I mean – try to work the system as much. I mean, because if you go back and just say, you know, and you add them back and they say, well, John, we asked you to clearly do it, so now you can't play. But if now you play by the rules, but you blast out every time they do it, and then you keep a second record of
what
it is, then I think you're doing at least – you're doing your part to make light of it. And then if they get rid of you, if they say something, then that's back on them because then it clearly shows that they're trying to be shady with the
because it's weird. Like, why if these – and again, if they just want to pull the people from eligibility so that they're not in there, that's up to them. But if you're telling me that they're eligible and I have them in here and I have access to put them on my list, but you're telling me I can't, that's weird.
Doesn't make any sense.
That's
especially
weird.
After only like just
a year and a week.
That's ridiculous.
You know what I mean?
Doesn't make any sense when we're having a fighter that's getting ready to fight that's been gone almost 2 years.
Now, like, I think, like, we've had instances where there's, like, women's fighters, and I think Caitlin Sermonara maybe is in this, where it's like, hey, I'm not going to accept a fight for a year because I'm trying to have a kid, and you know what I mean? Like, okay, I get that. You know what I mean? Like, hey, she's removed herself from eligibility because she's not fighting right now. Like, I get that, but like you said, transparency. Let's just have it. So anyway, I know they're still working on revisions for that. So hopefully, when they get that done, that is an issue that is addressed.
Yeah, because Marvin's. Well, I mean, granted, he had the fight that was supposed to happen April 5th, 2024, but his last fight was October 20th, 2023. So maybe he would have got the notice, and if it was another couple weeks.
Another couple weeks.
Because maybe they consider, well, there was that canceled bout that was supposed to happen, you know.
And if that's the case, look, if it's like, look, here's what we do. If it's been a year,
yep.
And you turn down a fight. Now, if you accepted a fight and were withdrawn, you stay in. But if you haven't accepted a fight in a year, we take you out of the rankings. I'm okay with that. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. I just need to know
precedent.
That's what it is, right? Yeah. Like, I think it's been a while since I've done it, but I think at Junkie when George and I were the ones that were kind
of
doing it,
I think we used to say
Marcos Rocheo de Lima and Caitlin Cervenera. I think at Junkie we decided it was 3 years and we didn't care what the reason was. Like, you know, whether you've taken fights or not, if you haven't fought in 3 years, like, you got to be off the list. I think that was our rule, if I remember right.
Yeah.
That way we didn't have to differentiate. Because I know at one point George and I were trying to say, well, if you've accepted a fight or if you're scheduled to fight, you know what I mean? But then we were like, no, if it's 3 years, you're just out.
Junior Tafo was February 17, 2024.
For Marcos Rogério de Lima?
Yeah.
So he's just over a year.
Just
as well.
Over a year.
And if that's what we're going with, fine. But Usman, for instance, the Shamaya fight was October of 23.
And no fight listed in between?
No. Yeah. So how does he get to stay on?
How does he stay?
Because he's a former champ, you get to stay on longer? Like, or is that just an oversight and people didn't realize it? Or
that's some shenanigans.
You know what I mean? And oh, by the way, that was a middleweight fight, so he actually hasn't fought at welterweight since March of 23. So now you're talking about 2 years. So I don't know. I just, again, and I'll be honest. Like I said, I've enjoyed being a part of the UFC rankings. I'm not trying to trash the UFC rankings. I've enjoyed it because I have been able to see the transparency in it. You know what I mean? And I have been able to see, but now, I just thought this one last week was a little weird. So, hopefully, they adjust this moving forward. They fix it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
All right, so UFC this weekend. We talked a little bit about the media day. I will be there. I will be there, though, having a cocktail in hand. It is actually my birthday on Saturday. So, I'll be hanging out just watching fights. So, do not expect me to be a particular journalist breakdown here. But I will say Marvin Vettori, Roman Dolidze, man, two matured guys coming in today, right? Like, both of them, it felt like they had evolved. They had grown. Marvin Vettori styling, as always. He's got he's got some very European flair to his get-up. But he's like, look, the angry Marvin is gone. The calm, cool, collected Marvin.
Cool. He's been hanging down there with the
big booty Latinas
big
in
booty
Miami.
Latinas just having his good time, smoking, having some Cubans, and just relaxing. But the one thing that did, though, throw me off is the severity of the injury, his shoulder injury, and what he said and how he was going through. That's the only thing that kind of puts me at worry about this. In fact, it kind of swayed me to change my step.
Yeah.
I picked Vettori.
Yeah, because he talked about
the odds are still going in the other stuff, but I mean, he made it look like the tendons. It was really, really hard, and it was a tough recovery. Apologize for the cat losing his fucking mind because he doesn't have food in there. I let the dog out, and the dog ate the cat food, and I forgot to put more food. So that's what he's yelling about. For anybody can hear him. But he pretty much was like considering, like he thought that maybe that this could have ended him, like this injury could have been enough, you know, and it wasn't all that long ago, you know. So, you know, to have something that's you think could be a career-ending injury, you're changing camps, you're feeling good about that, you're dealing with other stuff, you're enjoying the big booty Latinas, you know, you start to wonder if the hunger and if the drive is still going to be there, you know, whereas, you know, Dolidze, we've seen him recently, you know, we've seen him fighting really, really good. But, I mean, Marvin had a great point. I mean, like, his cardio has always been better than what we see Dolidze. Dolidze tends to putter out.
So in a five-round fight.
But, man, that time away, you have to think that changes a person. And dealing with a lot of changes. I mean, he certainly seemed relaxed. He certainly seemed at peace with himself. But, you know, there was something that was just – he didn't have the same edge that I remember, like, a lot of other times. And maybe that was part of what he said. He learned to deal with his anger and other stuff. Both of them, you know, kept bringing up how they were able to deal with his anger. But if your whole a lot of your fight career, that anger is what gave you your edge and gave you your fight style. And if that's gone, I just wonder, what are we going to see when we get out there?
It's so funny you say that, because I thought about that with those two guys, and I thought about it with Alexander Hernandez as well, yeah. Right? Now, with Alexander Hernandez, and I've always felt like he was a guy that was misunderstood. I felt like people were a little hard on him. Now, granted, it was because he went after Cowboy, and obviously, yeah. You know, I'm a Cowboy homer, so I enjoyed that knockout. But I still liked Alexander Hernandez, right? That was just a fun fight week. But you know, I liked Alexander Hernandez, and I thought he was misunderstood.
Yeah.
But I did always feel that his intensity level was like an unhealthy level of intensity, yeah. That you can't manage over the course of a long time.
Yeah.
So I honestly, like his interview today, it feels like he's in a really, really good place.
Yeah.
But I had that same question mark. Like, there is something to be said for, you know, it's good because on a daily basis you need to be in a healthy place, and this is hard.
Yeah,
but
you
like,
can't be going 110% nonstop.
You can't. But are you still able to tap into that? Because I understand, like, look, in mixed martial arts, you don't need to lose your head. You do need to be able to think.
Yeah.
But you do need to tap into it. Like,
yeah.
If you got a little bit of something angry inside of you, it's kind of nice to have that
It'll
to turn
help.
On. Yeah.
It'll probably help. I mean, like, you don't expect every – I mean, we like it when they have respect in the whole martial arts side. I love it. You know, if you want to bow afterwards, if you want to hug afterwards, I have no problem with that. But yeah, I mean, you kind of want them to have a little bit of that, like, I need to stomp on your face when we come out here, not like, oh man, I hope we both put on a wonderful performance. You know, at the end, I like the idea of when they're like, I want us both to put on a good show and nobody be injured, nobody go to the hospital. Like, I'm fine with that. You know, I don't need you to think like, oh man, I really hope he puts on his best performance, and I just want the crowd to be happy. You know, like, I kind of want you to say you're going to go in there and just dominate this dude, and you're going to make him your bitch, and then afterwards you can go have a beer and hug it out and go talk about each other's family. Like, that's cool, because then there's a different intensity. But, I mean, I believe, you know, these fighters, they know what they've done, and I think a lot of it, too, is just that maybe the anger and that push that they're focusing, they put a lot of pressure on themselves to get these big finishes, to get these things, and then it either set them up, you know, for when it didn't work out, then they carried that a lot longer. So I think if anything else, they learned to stop putting that pressure on themselves and just go out there and enjoy it, you know, and stop trying so hard for it. But, I mean, that being said, I would like to see some intensity, because a lot of these guys, I mean, they're going to need it, you know. And
it's,
I think
such
that's
a hard balance, right?
Yeah.
It's you can't be unhealthy with it, but you also need to have that fire. It's such a weird balance to strike, man. But that's just what makes this sport so
interesting. Especially on these three, because now I forgot. I mean, I didn't even think about how Alexander said that he had kind of calmed down, because I mean, this was a dude that literally.
Psychopath.
Yeah.
Legit
just
psychopath.
Like, psych himself up to like and go to crazy war.
That dude in his early days, well, I don't even want to say. I was going to say something terrible, but like, this is a perfect segue. Dark Side of the Cage ends tonight. It's the downfall of War Machine. This is going to be a tough one to watch, man.
What is that on?
Vice TV. Okay. So I had somebody, I was tweeting about this.
So you
earlier.
Can't access them after the fact? They're not
you can't.
Like,
they,
it's like VOD?
They do VOD, and they are putting them on YouTube as well. Now, they're not necessarily putting them on immediately after. I will say,
so it's not like tonight's the only night that.
No, it just debuts tonight.
Gotcha.
They sent me a clip right before I came over here. I posted a clip. The series has been good. In the beginning, like, I was like, I wish I could have more, you know what I mean? Because some of them, but some of the episodes that, you know, you didn't know all the information, you didn't live through, it's good. And now I kind of understand the concept better of, like, hey, it's not necessarily for you that lived through everything. It's not like we're showing you a whole new thing. It's like for people maybe that weren't around, like, how do you learn this history? How do you cram on this history and put things into context and understand things? And I think they did a really good job. They did, you know, good recreation. So anyway,
that's good.
But yeah, what I was going to say, the Dark Side of War Machine, that's obviously that is a dark side. But yeah, if Alexander Hernandez had some dark moments like that in his early days, you'd be like, yeah, all right,
makes sense.
You know what I mean, makes sense. And I hate to say that, but yeah. So I'm glad to see that he's kind of reeled it back or whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'll be in the Apex on Saturday, so I'll be sure and say hello to you. My wife and kid will be with me. We're gonna watch some fights and celebrate my birthday. I tell you what, I'm a couple of the fights I just want to point out real quick that I'm looking forward to. Damon Blackshear obviously came through CFFC, but I like Cody Gibson a lot.
A
I really like Cody Gibson as a human being.
I think Damon's a pretty, maybe a decent favorite, right?
Yeah, he's a big favorite.
I think the only other big favorite was the Vallejos, I think. He's a huge favorite over.
You know who else is? And I just saw this too. Josias Moussassa making his debut off the Contender Series is like a -800 over
Holy
Carlos
cow.
Vera. So I thought that one was – not to say that I get it. I mean, the dude has had some savage knockouts and had a big win on Contender Series. But I thought that was huge as well. So anyway, I'll be in there. So look for me hanging out in the crowd and maybe having a cocktail or two celebrating my birthday. I mean, you know, maybe I'll just have water.
Maybe. And I mean, going about that Vera, man, he's 37 against a 26.
Yeah,
girl, that just crushes kids. That's a big difference.
That's
a
huge difference. All right, listen, in addition to, of course, the UFC this weekend, I will give a last shout-out to CFSC 140 as well. If you're around on Friday night, please tune in. We'll be at 2300 Arena in Philadelphia if you happen to be out there. Should be a really, really fun card. Andre Petroski is going to be on the mic with me, so Petroski is back. We've got some really good fights. We got a lightweight title fight on the line. Robert Whiteley, who was our former champ. Remember, he asked to sign with the PFL. They did sign him. He's an alternate. But honestly, I was thinking an alternate's not a bad spot to be when you know you're an alternate straight into the tournament. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if any injuries happen, like, you're in there. So happy for him. But the vacant lightweight title will be on the line. Jesse Roberts versus Omar Rizgov. So that should be fun. And there's a couple other really nice prospects on the card as well that we'll talk to you about on Friday. But again, as a reminder, it's capped off by that Curtis Millender versus Yaroslav Amosov fight, which is super cool. Amosov, this is his first fight out of Bellator. Obviously, he lost the title last time out to Jason Jackson. Wanted the instant rematch. Unfortunately, Bellator/PFL wasn't able to put that together. He's a free agent. He's fighting Curtis Millender now. Did get a chance to talk to Curtis Millender, so if you get a chance to go over to the CFFC YouTube page and check out that interview, Curtis was upbeat. Obviously, he's been around the game for a long time. We've been covering his career for a decade plus. It was great to catch up with him, and I thought he had a great line. He was like, you know, talking about the fact that, hey, you know, maybe Amosov is, you know, most people feel if Amosov wins this fight, he's getting the UFC contract, right? And I was like, Curtis, are you in the same boat? Like, hey, if it's up for him, you know, maybe it's up for you too. And I thought it was hilarious because he was just kind of like, well, listen, he's like, I'm comfortable in my career. He's like, I do want to have some big fights. I want to travel. You know, he's like, I know I'm coming towards the end of it. I think he's 37 now. He's like, so, you know, if I get back, that's great. But his line was funny. He's like, well, look, if I'm not getting the call, like, maybe at least send me a text message or something. That was great. You know, he was talking about getting the call. He's like, well, shoot me a text. I'd be like, hey, what are you up to, Curtis? You want to get in there? So if you want to check out that interview ahead of it. But, yeah, tune in.
So that's a catch weight.
Catch weight, 183 pounds.
183.
So this is funny. So I asked him about this too. And, I, you know, like I said, go check out the interview. But I did ask him about that. And so Curtis was like, I guess – so this fight was supposed to happen on Friday in another organization in Chicago, right? But I guess it was originally before it was supposed to happen at that card, I guess they had been talking about it maybe being a little bit earlier. And so I asked Curtis, I'm like, so how did we end up at 183 pounds anyway, right? I was like, yeah, I was like, it's kind of random. And he's like, well, he's like, honestly, he was like, that was probably me. He was like, I was a little bit heavy when they first called me. And I was like, I don't know if I can make it down. So I guess they didn't want to go all the way up to middleweight, but they just settled at 183. But he's like, hey, props to Amosov, who's a welterweight, of course, former welterweight champ. He's
170 to 183 is a big, big difference.
And he's like, I'm going to be the bigger guy. He's like, I'm going to be way bigger. So
Amosov's he's a decent-sized dude,
though.
Amosov's
not bad either.
I know. He's going to be okay, I think. Because, you know, he's probably easily walking around over 185.
It's funny. I was talking to I was talking to our producer, Jay Cowan. We were talking about some of the stuff we're putting together for the show. And we were looking through Amosov's. I didn't know this about it. We were looking through Amosov's Instagram footage, and I guess he's like a big thrill seeker. So Jay Cowan worked with Bellator for a long time as a producer.
To fight in a war.
Yeah.
A thrill seeker.
Yeah, imagine that. Well, I know. I was like, oh, that makes total sense. But he, I don't know if all, he tattoos himself. There's like footage of him, and they're like tattooing his own foot. So I don't know if that whole, he has an amazing leg sleeve. I don't know if he did all of it, but there's like footage of him tattooing his own foot. I'm like, who does that?
I can see the foot. I bet he didn't do the sleeve. That would be crazy.
That would be. But anyway, so I'm excited for this. I was hoping to talk to Amosov leading into it, but never got a chance to connect with him. But we'll see him tomorrow. I'm actually flying out tonight, taking the red eye. We'll have weigh-ins tomorrow. We'll talk to him a little bit at the weigh-ins. And, of course, the fight will be on Friday night. So hopefully anybody that's listening to this is always watching CFFC. We would appreciate it if you do. But I think this one's going to be a little extra fun because, again, I think we've got some great fights. Junior Mello and Jimmy Drago should be a lot of fun. Chris Brown versus Igor Krasyshenko should be a lot of fun. We got some great fights all the way up and down it. But the idea that we can take the former Bellator champ, 27-1, Curtis Millender, the UFC Bellator PFL veteran, bring them together for this special attraction. It's pretty neat. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
So, and again, myself and Andre Petrosky will be on the mic. And then our next event will be April 19th. And I'm still waiting to figure out which day. I know CM Punk's not going to be on the microphone, but I'm still waiting to figure out which day that he's – I got to figure out which day he's going. Jose Young says he thinks he's going Saturday, which I hope not, because I want it to be Sunday.
For
WrestleMania here in Vegas, because I want to come back and watch that at Allegiant Stadium and see Punk, man. Cool. I want to see Punk wrestle. So we'll see. We've got plenty of time to talk about that. All right, listen, we'll do it in a half episode for everybody over at patreon.com/DMAroadshow. We'll do that on Monday after I have recovered from my birthday on Saturday. And just because I'll be tired, because I'll be flying back. I'll be flying back from Philadelphia.
Yeah,
we'll have a lot of
Saturday,
sleep.
You know, and then Sundays, you know. Yeah.
I'll be in rough shape on Sunday.
So. I'm sure you will.
So that's why Monday is the day to do it. Hey, 10 years, man. 10 years. Been a heck of a ride. Anybody that has made this whole journey with us, we appreciate it. Anybody that's had even a little piece of that 10 years, man, we appreciate you spending any time whatsoever.
Yes,
we've always wanted to just be a couple dudes sitting around shooting shit and talking about some fights. And
we succeeded at that.
We did. We used to have a lot more cocktails and frosty beverages along the way. And then,
oh, we were supposed to have one for this one. I do have to go to that Red Cross training later on. Well, how about Monday? We'll make up for it.
Just keep the party going.
Oh, that's right. You're trying to recover.
No. We just keep the party going. So there you go.
We did say we're going to tap into it, but
We've got Callie's bottle of Canadian whiskey that we need to get into.
Behind the curtain, I'm going to a Red Cross training tonight, and so I was like, I shouldn't really bring up drinking
you
whiskey.
You are such a responsible human being.
I know.
I want
to be able to return. I want to retain the training.
You are going to Red Cross training so that if there's ever an emergency situation in Las Vegas, you can be called upon to assist in the community. And yes, I do agree with you. Showing up with whiskey on your breath would be a really bad look.
Really bad look.
A really bad look. But that's incredibly responsible of you.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it's 2 days. Tomorrow's all day long. We're actually going back at it in the morning, and then we're actually doing like some different demonstrations and other stuff tomorrow. It's gonna be like 8 hours tomorrow.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, it's the training that you don't ever want to have to use. But you know, I know there's a lot of people out there that are first responders and other like sort of stuff. This would be about, say, if we ever had like another October 1 or another massive thing where we actually have to set up a shelter for sheltering people, feeding them, getting them general resources, and then there's other little things about helping them to try to reconnect with family and all the other stuff, you know. I've been volunteering with them for 13 years, and a lot of it's been on like the public affairs side.
Yeah, yeah.
So I try to train on the other stuff because at the end of the day, you know, they need as many hands as possible. If anything ever like that happens again, you know, which I don't want to ever have to use this training, but it would be good to just have another body for them to pitch in, you know, because that could be somebody. If I could be the person that helps a friend or somebody that we know or somebody that somebody cares about to either reconnect or just, you know, recover from whatever, you know, that's our duty as human beings, you know, to try to help others. So at least that's my hippie side. Like, help people out.
Nah, that's super cool, though, man. That's super cool, man. I got a lot of respect for it. Because I know, like you said, you've been volunteering for a long time, but it's been more like, well, I'm a trained videographer, so let me help you do some videography stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I got
photos,
you.
Yeah.
I can do this. Which is not, like, invaluable. Like,
yeah,
it's good.
Cool.
Like, you know,
cool.
But this is, like, taking it to the next level. Of being like, hey, if my community needs help, like, I'll actually be able to potentially assist in helping my community.
Yeah.
So. Very cool. Very responsible of you.
I appreciate it. Well, and that's a good excuse to not drink, but we will be tapping into that bottle.
Let's go. Birthday weekend going strong. So we're going to do calling fights on Friday, being at fights on Saturday. I'm sure me and the family will have maybe get into a little something on Sunday as well, and then we'll just keep the party going on Monday as well. Birthday.
Because I leave on Tuesday for my own trip, so I guess I could go a little bit. All right, Monday night should be fun.
Let's go.
All right, let's do it.
All right, tune in to CFSC 140 on Friday night. I'll see you guys from the Apex on Saturday. And, of course, everybody over at patreon.com/AMAroadshow. Check out the Drunken and Half on Monday. Regardless of what level you're at, what you're playing, let me just say, 10 years in, thanks for listening.